I'm Liz Corey.
And I'm Katie King.
And this is True Crime New England. What's up, everybody?
Hello. Welcome back to another episode.
We're so glad to have you here with us listening to our voices as we tell you a disturbing tale.
This one is really brutal.
Yeah, it's terrible. So nothing new, really. This is what we do, and we're glad to have you here. Katie, how have you been?
I've been good.
Great.
I've been just cruising through life.
Cruising, yeah. That's good. Because usually you say day by day. So I'm glad. I'm glad to hear that. Recently, I was home in New Hampshire, just visiting for the day. I actually texted my mom and I was like, I'm going to come home on Friday. And she said, you need a hobby. And I was like, okay. But I just wanted to go home. So I went to my grandfather's house. And a little bit about my grandfather. He is not technologically savvy. And when my grandma was alive, she had an iPhone, and she actually had, her hearing aids were Bluetooth and they connected to her phone. So whenever she listened to our podcast, it was just like in her ear canals.
That is so cool. Mm-hmm.
So he never like listened to it, and he never had any interest, and he knew that we swore and like, he didn't like that, whatever. And, so we were sitting there, and you know, my gram died, and he has her phone. He doesn't use it great. He actually, goes on her Facebook, which is kind of creepy when your dead grandma likes your Facebook post. But it's just him. He's learning. And he actually ended up getting stuck on like a, almost like a, not a scam, but like an article, like a BuzzFeed article about Prince Harry losing his virginity to a 50-year-old woman or something. And he accidentally sent it to a whole bunch of people. Like I think he just panicked. Anyway, he's not great with technology. But we were sitting there and I was visiting him and I said, oh, yeah, hey, whatever. And all of a sudden he just goes, I was sitting here the other day and all of a sudden your podcast came on. And I was like, oh, it did. That's weird. I don't know how it just turned on. You must have pressed something. And keep in mind, this is the first time he's ever listened to our podcast. And so he says, you know, I just heard your podcast. And I said, oh, you did. And he goes, I didn't like it. And I was like, oh.
Damn.
I was like, you didn't. And he said, there was too much talking. And I said, Bobby, that's what a podcast is. Like, it's talking. And he said, no. There was too much talking in between. And I said, oh, well, I mean, at the beginning, we did long intros and we've kind of fixed that. And, you know, we know that's not a great, you know, like, people don't like it, whatever. So we fix it. We don't do that anymore. And he was like, no, like, when you're talking about the case, there's too much talking. And I was like, Poppy, I know you're 84, but like it's an audio based production. Like, it's only talking. And he was like, that's the only comments I have is just too much talking. And I was like, okay. I mean, I can't explain podcasting to you. And he said it was too long. And I said, well, we have mini episodes that are like 25 minutes max, usually like 18 to 22. And he was like, oh, okay. I'll have to listen to that. And I was like, I looked at my mom and I was like, yeah, he straight up said he didn't like it. He's very honest and I appreciate that. But man.
Damn.
I know.
We don't have Grampy's stamp of approval.
I know. I was like, Poppy, that hurt my heart a little bit. And also, I need to sit down and teach you what a podcast is, because that's all it's talking. There's no visual aspect.
That's so funny. Like, it wasn't even, like, too much talking in the beginning.
No, no.
Not too much talking about your opinions on what just happened.
Right. I
just
tried to clarify.
Period.
Yep. I tried to clarify, like, was it the beginning? Was it our opinion? No, he literally just said too much talking. Yeah. So, I have great support. We tried getting him a flip phone, like, a few years ago, and we programmed it. No, there was no coming. Yeah. So it's like, he can do solitaire on her old iPad, and he can apparently send Facebook links, but that's about it. So I'm not too worried about him listening to this one per se, because I don't even know how he got to the one.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know what one it was. It could have been the first one. I have no idea. He just didn't like it. So I thought that was so funny. I was just taken. It took me by surprise. Because my Aunt Kim, who lives with him, plays us out loud. So he's definitely heard it before. At least, maybe not. He did probably just pay attention. But, so I mean, I don't know. I just thought it was like, okay.
Ruthless.
Yeah.
Ruthless critique.
Well, you know what? That's okay. Because it's, yeah, he's Poppy. He's fine. We'll give him a pass. But I still was like, I have to tell Katie that because it's relevant.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah, it's good. And he's a true crime, I mean, I wouldn't say true crime fan, but we talk about that stuff all the time. You know, he watches CNN all day long. So he sees stuff and...
Yeah.
So we just... I know he likes... Okay, he's okay talking about that stuff, but not me, I guess. Not when I talk about it. Not when you talk about it. So that was great. Support from all around. But anyway, enough of the cute grandpa talk. We're going to deep dive right into the worst fucking thing ever. Ever.
Yeah. This one is awful. It was actually suggested to us by Jamie K via Instagram DM. So thank you, Jamie.
Thanks, Jamie. I had heard about this, but in a different way. Like, I didn't recognize the victim's name. I recognized more, like, just what happened.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And it was pretty recent, so.
Yeah, that's right. I remember hearing about it when we were in school.
Yeah, we were, like, we must have been seniors in high school. Yeah, give or take. So, and I mean, it's local to us, of course. So it's, like, and it was brutal. So I was, like, holy shit.
Yeah.
And scary. And for a while, it was... He was missing, and it was like a whole thing. We'll get into it. So it was a little back and forth, but we got the story for you today. And we hope you stick around for it, because it's good. And without further ado, today we will be covering
the murder of Lee-Manuel Valoria Paulino.
All right, Katie, what do you have for sources for me today?
I have Mass Live, two separate articles from the Eagle Tribune, NBC News, and the Boston Herald.
Awesome. I use CBS News, WCVB, the Salem News is where the website. Also two articles from the Eagle Tribune. I used All That's Interesting, the Gloucester Times, and Lee's Memorial Facebook page. I had a lot of stuff.
Hell yeah.
Yeah, right. Katie, start us off.
On November 18th, 2016, 16-year-old Lee-Manuel Valoria Paulino went missing. Lee was a good kid. He was a smart student. He went to Lawrence High School in Lawrence, Massachusetts. Not like him at all whatsoever to not tell his family about his whereabouts.
Mm-hmm.
Not like him at all.
Mm-hmm. Classic. We always hear this.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
He lived in a house with a lot of his extended family. So when they all kind of got together and they're like, wait, you haven't heard from Lee? I haven't heard from Lee.
Yeah.
They did what any loving and caring family member would do, and they went to the police.
Right.
To file a report.
Naturally.
Rather than classifying the teenager as a missing child,
mm-hmm.
the police decided to classify Lee as a runaway.
Why?
I don't understand why. Part of me is thinking that Lee is a person of color, so maybe that was kind of along those lines that they were thinking.
But he was 16.
He was 16, exactly.
He doesn't have the means to go run away and be safe. Oh my god.
We will talk more about this infuriating piece of information later, because Lee's family feels as though this really jeopardized the investigation and finding him.
Right. Absolutely. That can 100% be a delay in solving something, and for some cases, helping someone survive or finding them in the nick of time.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my god. Ridiculous. On December 1st of 2016, just, you know, 2 weeks barely after he went missing, a Massachusetts resident named Omar Medina was walking his dog like he did every single day, along the same path he did every single day. It was right behind his house, along the Merrimack River. Great, loved it. Normally, they would take this path, and he and the dog would follow it, like, heading right, like how it always had. On this day, though, his dog wasn't listening to him, was pulling the leash, and was relentless. Like, she wanted to go to the left. And so he kind of let her. She was really trying to take control, and basically what happened was the dog was, well, she found something, and the scent, her scent picked up, you know, something awful. And basically what happened was Omar got to where his dog was freaking out, and he discovered a body. Not believing what he saw, Omar got his girlfriend. He called her, and he said, please come. Like, I think I'm crazy. There's no way I'm seeing this. There's things that are missing, and there's something wrong. The girlfriend comes, and she says, you are absolutely, like, I'm seeing it too. That is a body without its head and its hands. So, obviously, they called the police. When the police arrived, they were also met, of course, with this horrible scene, which was essentially a body without a head and no hands. Very gruesome and just, oh, it's so awful.
I can't imagine.
Just even the thought of that, I would be violently ill. Like, how can you even, nightmares and just, oh, that's mm-hmm. awful. That's awful. So, Lawrence Police Detective William Olivieri, he was the one who arrived on scene. And he recalls that the head was missing from the body and that the corpse was wearing a black t-shirt and black sweatpants. He says the upper part of the torso was like sticking slightly out of the water and the rest was still submerged in the water. And he didn't even touch the body, but he was able to observe that there was no hands either. More police officers arrived and they're like, okay, we need to canvass this area like real well because maybe we'll be able to find something like his head or his hands. About 50 yards down the river, a man named Brian O'Neill, who was a state police sergeant, was canvassing looking, and he saw a plastic bag bobbing in the water. And he thought, well, you know, it could be a bag of trash, but it also could be something we need. So he took a stick, brought it to the shore, took another stick and opened it, used two sticks to open it. And inside, there was another bag. So he opened that. In that bag, all he saw, he opened it just enough to see an ear. And he said, okay, this is evidence. I'm not going to do anything else. And he took it out of the water and just, essentially, he found the victim's head. As far as I know, I don't think his hands were ever found.
To my knowledge, I don't think so.
No. So within the next few days, unfortunately, the body was identified as 16-year-old Lee Manuel Valoria Pauline. A brutal discovery. There's something about being beheaded that is just the most disgusting and brutal thought.
You don't even want to process it. Like, it's really hard to imagine, one, finding that.
Yeah.
Two, another human being doing that to somebody else. Mm-hmm. Like, it's such a brutal and violent act.
Oh, it's awful.
And to have that done to a child, a 16-year-old.
Yeah.
It's just such a level of brutality. Mm-hmm. It's crazy.
It's so personal.
Yes.
Yep. That's not something that happens to a stranger. Like, I don't know. I feel like that's just so too personal to be like a stranger opportunity killing.
Right. And to do that to someone, you are doing that intentionally to conceal their identity and to make it harder to identify that person.
Especially when you take the hands too. That's for sure. Classic mob. Love the mob. But there have been rumors in the past that perhaps someone named Whitey Bulger, maybe Boston, Irish, love the Irish, we love the mafia, but it was his technique, supposedly, that he would cut off the head and the hands, because it is, you use fingerprints, you mm-hmm. use obviously the face, the dental, their face, you know, can be identified in a picture, so you take those away, you do whatever, burn them, bury them somewhere else, and it's harder to identify, at least, you know, back in the day, but I guess whoever had done this thought maybe, okay, this is how I'll get away with it.
Right.
And unfortunately, he was wrong. And unfortunately for him, he was wrong. But it was obvious to the police and investigators that someone was trying to go through great lengths to keep this identity a secret. And also was clearly very close to this person in a way to do such a brutal thing.
Definitely.
And cutting off someone's head is not easy.
No, absolutely not.
That takes a lot. A lot of force, a lot of motion. It's not easy. So that's awful.
It didn't take investigators long to pinpoint a certain someone mm-hmm. 15-year-old Matthew Borges. 15 years old.
15. They kind of have him on their radar
mm-hmm.
pretty soon after the discovery. Actually, even before they discovered the body. 15.
Matthew had homicidal ideations, as well as a lot of jealousy. He was very jealous of Lee, because Lee was talking to a girl that Matthew liked. And Matthew was very jealous of this.
It's high school. In 10 years, you guys don't even remember that you had a crush on this girl. It's... Okay, sorry.
It's crazy to me. Like, talking and interacting and being friendly with someone. Not even officially dating.
Mm-hmm.
Not that them being official would make it okay.
No, no.
But this just goes to show how over the top this person was.
Yeah.
So, during the investigation, they're talking to Matthew, and he's kind of going back and forth with police, and his story is changing,
yeah.
and it's not making sense, and he's lying, and then he's, you know, he's not a good liar, number one.
Yeah.
So police are like, okay, why are you telling us 7 different versions of a poorly put together story?
Yeah.
And then 4 boys come forward and reveal a huge piece of information.
Mm-mm-mm.
On the night that Lee went missing, November 18th, Matthew had planned to distract Lee and get him out of the apartment so that his 4 friends could break in mm-hmm. and rob Lee of his clothes and other items like electronics.
Mm-hmm.
They took a PlayStation.
Yeah.
They took belts, shoes.
Mm-hmm. They took a lot of clothes.
They broke in and they robbed Lee blind.
And it seems like, obviously, what they did was awful, but it seems like they were under the impression that they were getting back at their buddies, somebody who was trying to get his girl. So they were just, you know, they thought they were, you know, citizen justice or whatever, because, you know, that was Matthew's girl. Why is Lee talking to this chick? So they were just going to get back at him.
Right. And when you're an idiot, impulsive teenage boy,
happens.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
Like, and okay, let's get back at Lee. Fuck him.
Right.
We're going to back up our homie Matthew.
Right. And then Matthew was going to take care of Lee, get him away. And then when we're safe, he's going to come back. Well, Matthew had a secret part of his plan that he didn't give the info to for these 4 guys.
Yeah. Lee lived on Forest Street in Lawrence with multiple other family members, like we said. Somehow these 4 boys were able to get inside and steal a bunch of Lee's stuff without mm-hmm. any of the family members knowing or hearing.
Mm-hmm.
That's crazy to me.
That's all. Impressive a little.
Yeah, it's scary.
It's scary. It's very scary.
And second of all, for Lee to leave his apartment with Matthew
mm-hmm.
and just go down to the waterfront. Mm-hmm. And, you know, one of the articles I read said that Matthew might have told Lee, let's go smoke some weed.
Mm-hmm.
And talk and catch up.
Yeah.
Because they knew each other.
They went to school together.
They're not close friends,
mm-hmm.
but they aren't strangers either. I mean, it right. wouldn't be abnormal for Lee to go with Matthew. Just like, it's not a strange thing.
Yeah, and it was like one of his family members, when Matthew came to the door that night, he said the family member said that he recognized Matthew, mm-hmm. not as friends, but he had come around before, so it was like no big deal. Didn't seem that weird because he had seen him. It was just another kid, another 15-year-old, whatever.
After the 4 boys had finished taking a bunch of Lee's stuff, they kind of gathered together in an alley to go over what they had taken, to kind of talk about the next couple steps, and just to regroup before they were going to go to one of the boys' houses.
Yeah.
While they're waiting in the alley, just kind of talking and figuring out the next step for the night, they get a phone call from Matthew.
Oh.
Matthew started off by saying, quote, my hands were bloody. He came at me the wrong way, so I did what I had to do.
And they're standing there holding his stolen PlayStation, his clothes, his belt. And they're like, come again? What was that? Your hands are blood. Okay.
Right. Like, is Lee okay? What happened?
Right.
Matthew then told the boys that he, quote, killed Lee. And cut off his head.
Oh my, can you imagine being that on the other end of that call? That's horrifying.
I would die.
Yeah.
I would die. And even the one that answered the phone,
mm-hmm.
the 3 others can hear this.
Yeah.
So you have four witnesses to what Matthew was saying.
Yeah, that's pretty strong.
He said he stabbed Lee and beheaded him so they wouldn't get caught.
Right.
Which at 15 years old, to correlate cutting off someone's head with hiding a murder and preventing police from identifying him at least quickly.
Mm-hmm.
That's crazy.
That's dark.
That is crazy to know to do that at 15.
Yeah, that's scary.
Holy shit.
Yeah, that's scary. So, like we said, Matthew had been seen before. You know, it's a community, whatever. They went to the same school. His family member recognized him a little bit, whatever. So he came around that night. It was like 5:30, and it was no secret to Lee's family that he liked to smoke weed. It wasn't a big deal. And, I mean, obviously now, as time goes on, we know that marijuana is not a big deal at all. You can make, of course, the argument for underage, whatever. But they knew that he liked to smoke weed and whatever. His family member said that when he was high, he was very inspired and he got more creative, which I can see that for sure. So he tended to have his most profound thoughts when he was high. So when a guy comes around and is like, hey, I'll smoke you up, as they say. Okay, great. So they went down to the Merrimack River, where unfortunately he was discovered a few weeks later. And it's like a 5 to 8 minute walk from Lee's house. It's short. You know, by the time midnight rolled around and he still wasn't home, his family got worried. And, you know, it's November in Massachusetts. The sun sets at like 2 p.m. It's so early. And the temperatures drop pretty steadily. And by midnight there, it's cold. And you figure on the water, too, pretty cold. So they were worried. They went to the police. And they were actually able to turn in his cell phone because he left it behind. It seemed as though Lee was planning on coming right back, like smoking up in probably like an hour or so and then just coming back and doing whatever. They were able to turn in his iPhone as evidence to the police, which was good. On November 23rd, 5 days after he went missing, police detectives went to visit Matthew at his home in Lawrence as well and asked if he knew where Lee was. Matthew told a story of half-truths, saying that he and Lee had gone to the riverfront, smoked some weed, and then Lee left, he said, and he stayed by the river and just finished up his joint or whatever and just hanging, and he didn't see Lee after that. Okay. On November 29th, 11 days after he went missing, and 6 days after he spoke to the police last, the same police detectives returned and asked Matthew if he could come to the police station to be interviewed. Matthew brought his papa. Probably, I mean, he's 15. He's probably scared, too.
Right.
Understandably.
And I feel like you would need to bring an adult with you to be questioned if you're a minor.
Sure.
Okay, fine.
Great. Whatever. And I bet he was nervous because he did it. Right. So he probably was like, oh, shit. And having your dad there to back you up, to say, no way he did it, probably makes you feel better, protected. So he and his dad went to the Lawrence police station. Matthew was read his Miranda rights, and they told him, of course, you absolutely have the right to remain silent if you want. You're not under arrest, but you don't have to say anything if you don't want to. So it's good that his dad was there in that sense because, you know, having an adult figure, whatever. During this interview, Matthew flips that story he had. He says that it was him who left the riverbank. Oops. Sorry, I mixed it up. I left. And then Lee stayed behind, finished up a joint, whatever. Now, my thought process is, who would forget that? How do you flip that? You all of a sudden put yourself there staying at the riverbank by yourself when really it was him that left?
Two completely different scenarios.
Yeah, it's not.
Completely different.
It's a whole new story, essentially.
Great.
Yeah. And then the police asked if, maybe do you think that Lee could have run away? Was there trouble at home? Did he maybe think that he was hiding somewhere? Was he with a secret girl, whatever? And Matthew was like, I don't know. Like, maybe, probably. I mean, probably, right? You know, the rest of the interview, and you can read some of the transcript, Matthew became more and more agitated and more obviously guilty because he started saying, I don't know. I don't want to talk about that. Which, of course, he had the right to say that. Absolutely, that's a part of the Miranda rights. But he kept saying, he started getting less and less talkative and being like, crossing his arms, like, I don't want to, I don't know, whatever.
Which is crazy from someone who initially was ready to spill the whole can of beans.
Literally. And he did quite readily to those four friends, too.
Right.
Which, when you're a teenager, I'm sorry, but as a teenager, loved gossip. Loved it. Could not keep a secret. No, you just get, you're a teenager. It's interesting. You tell everyone everything. There's no way this kid thought he could tell these other kids that he beheaded someone and have not a soul tell. He was actually lucky in that regard for a while because they didn't tell. All four of those kids, assuming scared for themselves, that they would be connected to this murder, even though they had no part in the murder, I would be scared too.
Definitely, because they still committed a crime. They
right.
broke into Lee's apartment
right.
and stole his things.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, December 3rd, 2016, Matthew was arrested after the police searched his home. And they also found surveillance video which showed Lee leaving his house with Matthew right before his predicted time of death.
Lee's mom, Catiusca Paulino, said that her son was a poet, dreamer, and writer, and that he was, quote, sincere, loving, responsible, charismatic, and altruistic young man.
His whole family had so much praises to say about this young man.
Oh my God. It was, they all showed up in court. I mean, Lee's entire extended family, grandparents, aunts, uncles, took up the whole front row.
Yeah.
In the courtroom.
Yeah.
And they were wearing black t-shirts with Lee's picture.
Yeah.
Lee's mom gave a victim impact statement in court stating, quote, there are no more dreams for the dreamer, the brother, the writer, and the poet that was Lee Manuel Valoria Paulino. He has been the soul of this family since he was born. We are the living dead after he was brutally ripped from our side.
Yeah. He was so well loved. It's, you know, it's just heartbreaking for this family. And again, to find your son, your brother, your grandson, your cousin after 2 weeks and he's in the water and he's beheaded. That's worst case scenario.
Oh my God. Thinking about burying a loved one with a body part detached from them.
Yeah.
And then body parts missing.
Yeah.
To bury a loved one with their head mm-hmm. not attached to them and their hands cut off.
Yeah.
What the fuck?
Yeah. It's like incomplete, you know, burying something incomplete. There's still bits of him out there. And that's horrifying and also so fucking sad. Even though Matthew was 15, again, reminder, he was 15 when he beheaded a classmate. He was tried as an adult, which I think is appropriate. Obviously, a lot came out during the trial, and this is 2016, so everyone had an iPhone or an Android, whatever. Records of the phones can be easily traced. Surveillance video, awesome, love it. And so during testimony, a girl named Stephanie Soriano, you know, testified and said, okay, here's the thing. A day before Lee was murdered, Matthew was texting me, and they had been talking, you know, kind of like flirting, and it was, you know, they had been having a thing for a while. Mm-hmm. And Matthew told the girl that his, quote, his eyes would look dead soon, and that eyes that are dead, quote, would make you think about what that person has done. So he told that to this girl a day before he killed Lee. And it makes it sound like perhaps he was planning to
Shit.
Yeah. And so this girl, obviously, at the time, she was like, what the? This guy, this is weird. And then that happened. And I don't think she immediately connected when he went missing. Like, you know, whatever. How would they be connected? So, but I'm sure after when they found him, she was like, oh my God.
Oh my. So he literally told her, expect to see a change in me.
Yeah.
Because I'm going to do something bad.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm. Another girl, her name was Leilani De Jesus, she was actually an ex-girlfriend of Matthew, and she testified as well, saying that there was an altercation between Matthew and Lee a little while before his murder. He said that Leilani was having lunch with Lee. Just having lunch. Could it be romantic? Maybe. Who cares? They also could have been talking about the homework assignment for that night. Who gives a shit? Matthew saw, got super jealous, and he yelled at her and him in front of the whole cafeteria, so much so that he had to be escorted out by a school official. Yeah.
Oh my god.
I think that altercation triggered something in Matthew, and maybe that's when it started to turn and he was like, okay, I got four friends, let's do this, they'll help me, and without knowing what I'm gonna do. And that's what started all of that.
Prosecutor Jay Gubatos argued that the murder was premeditated and that it was a violent, brutal murder. Quote, this is something he was looking forward to, anticipating. Lee was stabbed dozens of times while he was still alive.
Yeah.
You don't stab someone dozens of times and not be a crazy person. Like,
yeah.
And also, too, why do you have a weapon on you when you are going to supposedly go to the waterfront with your buddy and smoke some weed?
Yeah. Okay. Weird.
And even the planning part. Getting four of your friends to agree to break into this kid's apartment while you lure him away, that's planning.
100%.
I don't understand
it. Even hours before, that's enough to be considered premeditation.
For sure.
They consider a lot less for premeditation. So.
Matthew's defense attorney, Edward Hayden, tried to argue that Matthew was just a teenager and that he could be redeemed. He asked to have his parole eligibility set at 25 years, stating, quote, he has been convicted of a horrible offense, but he is not irredeemably depraved. There is hope for his redemption. He can change his life.
Sorry, but no the fuck he can't.
For me, when you are still developing as a child, and that is what you think of, is beheading a classmate because you're jealous of him for talking to a girl, and you go so far as to behead him and cut off his hands and lure him away and stab him dozens of times in a rage.
Yeah. That's...
You are depraved. Yes, you are irredeemably depraved. I'm sorry.
Yeah. No, 100%. And that was his, as far as we can tell, his first crime. He immediately jumped to beheading. He's clearly messed up. There is no hope for his redemption.
No, not a chance.
Not even a little. But don't worry. Edward Hayden, he did argue, since he had been in jail waiting for trial, it had been about 3 years by the time the trial happened, Matthew got his GED at an accelerated rate, guys. Probably because he was in jail. What else was he going to do? But also, cool. He started taking college courses. Awesome. Redeemable. And just want to let you guys know, he did not receive any disciplinary reprimands in the structured environment in that time. So 3 years, he didn't kill anybody else. And he got his GED, goddammit. And he's taking college. He is better.
Clearly, he should be let out now.
Right.
He's cancel got, the trial, please.
You are good. You're great, sir. It's like, are you serious? That's your argument?
Let's have some common sense.
He killed someone. And he was a teenager. No, not a fan.
In the end, the jury agreed with prosecution and felt that Matthew murdered Lee with extreme cruelty and that the murder was absolutely, without a doubt, premeditated.
Yes.
Matthew was tried as an adult, like you said, Liz. Usually an adult convicted of first-degree murder gets life in prison without the possibility of parole. But in 2013, the Massachusetts State Supreme Court ruled that a life sentence without the possibility of parole for juveniles receiving adult sentences was unconstitutional. In this case, the maximum sentence would be life in prison with the possibility of parole after 30 years.
Yeah.
Which is what he received.
Right.
After 8 days of court testimony and jury deliberation for just under 9 hours, Matthew Borges was sentenced to the maximum sentence, like we talked about.
Yeah.
Matthew never testified and no witnesses were ever called in his defense. Not a single one of his family members came to the trial or sentencing.
Which, honestly, this kid is a monster. He did awful things. I think the fact that nobody came also speaks volumes.
Mm-hmm.
It sounds like he didn't have anyone at home. He didn't have any support. He didn't have any loved ones. or at least they all backed away when he got convicted or arrested. Again, worst awful human being ever, deserves to be in jail forever, but that's sad.
Yeah. Right, exactly. Either he had nobody at home, no support, or he had all the support in the world, and they were saying, we reject you for what you did.
Yeah.
Go fuck yourself. Like, we disown you.
Yeah.
Go to prison.
Which I feel like doesn't happen all that often. I feel like there's always somebody who stays by your side. Yeah. We see that all the time in these cases.
Definitely.
So, and he was just a little baby. Like, it's just, again, he's the worst. Fuck that guy. But I can see maybe how that would be very sad.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
This episode honestly reminds me a little bit of Colleen Ritzer, episode 42 that we did.
Yes.
With a minor being that much of a psychopath.
Yeah.
Attacking someone that you only kind of knew.
Mm-hmm.
And that viciously.
So brutal.
Like going 0 to 100.
Yeah.
Crazy.
It's nuts.
Now, if you guys remember at the top of the episode, we had mentioned that Lee was classified as a runaway instead of a missing person.
Just so you guys know, I just rolled my eyes.
Let's dig into that a little more. After Lee's body was found, his grandmother, Evelise Corniel, stated, quote, "We are poor, we are Hispanic. They considered this a normal runaway case. I told them from day one that it wasn't."
Yeah, oh, that's heartbreaking.
The mayor of Lawrence at the time publicly backed the police and defended their investigation,
boo,
but quietly launched a $25,000 independent investigation into how Lee's case was handled.
I don't know how to feel about that.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah.
This independent investigation was hindered by the case itself, the district attorney, and to no one's shock, the lack of the police's willingness to answer questions.
Okay.
Black and Missing's co-founder Derricka Wilson stated, quote, "We've had so many cases that were actually initially classified as runaways, and the kids were not runaways. In some of those cases, the kids were found to be deceased. Some of the kids were victims of human trafficking."
Right.
She also went on to say that runaways do not get an Amber Alert. They are also less likely to get a missing persons flyer, and they are less likely to get the same media attention as someone who is classified as a missing person, especially a minor,
right,
especially a minor of color.
Right.
Quote, "When a minor is classified as a runaway, the case is not considered a priority and there's no sense of urgency from law enforcement and the media," which is true, time and time again.
Yeah.
Lee Manuel's mother, Catiusca Paulino, stated, quote, "To every police officer, detective in our police department, if it was their kid, would they have waited 2 weeks to look for him?"
And the answer to that is no.
Mm-hmm.
And that is the horrible, brutal murder of 16-year-old Lee Manuel Valoria Paulino at the hands of 15-year-old Matthew Borges. There are no words. Evil comes to mind. Sinister.
Sadistic.
Selfish.
Mm.
He's all those bad words. Like, how awful. 15 years old, he did that. He is irredeemably depraved.
Oh. For sure.
For sure. But don't worry, he got his GED. And while he was in jail, he didn't commit any crimes.
That's what's, like, how do you use that as an argument? They always use that, like, "I did this, this, and this in prison." Like, okay, good for you. I'm glad you were using your time somewhat effectively as opposed to staring at the wall.
Sure. Yeah.
And it makes me so mad.
Mm-hmm.
It makes me so mad. In some cases, I understand it.
Yeah.
Like, okay, sure. You were arrested for selling weed.
Yeah.
And you're in prison and you use this time to better yourself. And you are genuinely going to be released as a better person.
Right.
And you are genuinely going to be able to contribute meaningfully in society.
Right.
Okay, perfect.
Great.
I don't understand how someone who beheads another person can then be released and just roam.
No.
Nope.
Don't like that.
No.
Like, don't want that in my community.
Fuck no. If I'm grocery shopping and the person sitting next to me in the produce aisle, I'm like, oh shit, I saw you on the news 30 years ago. You beheaded a classmate. No, absolutely not. I'm leaving my cart and I'm going home and I'm locking my door.
Yeah. And I'm calling the police.
Right. Why are you out?
Yeah. And they're like, well, he's released. Why?
What is the reason?
He has a history of beheading. Like, that's... I'll never get it. I'll never understand laws or rules or... Mm-hmm. And just because he has eligibility for parole in 30 years, pray to God he doesn't get it. But that also brings Lee's family back into it again.
Yeah.
And again. And again, every time he would appeal, every time he's up for parole,
it's not fair.
It's not fair. If you guys want to tell us what you think about Matthew's sentencing, do you think he could be redeemed? Do you think that's a load of bullshit? You can find us on Instagram and tell us that at truecrimene.
All lowercase.
Or you can send us an email at our email address, which would be truecrimene@gmail.com.
We also, of course, have a website, truecrimene.com. We have a handy-dandy submission tool where you can send us your thoughts on this case, other cases we have covered, mm-hmm. suggestions for cases you would like to hear in the future. You can be anonymous if you so choose. If you leave your name, you will get a shout-out if we end up covering the case you recommended. Thank you again to the lovely listener who suggested this case to us.
Thanks, Jamie.
And if you want to scroll down a little further below our handy-dandy submission tool, we have a link to our Buy Us a Coffee. You could buy us a little drinky drink. Liz doesn't drink coffee, but the thought is still the same.
I'll drink a hot chocolate. Cheers to that.
But honestly, you don't even have to do that because you being here and listening, we appreciate you guys so much.
That's all we need, your support, and we're thankful every day. And with that, we'll see you next week.
Bye.
Goodbye.